I'd like to introduce David Yepsen, who's sitting on my left. He is the director of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University. Previously, he had a 34-year career with the Des Moines Register. He was the paper's chief political writer, political editor, and political columnist. He's a Hawkeye. He's a graduate of the University of Iowa. During his career, he has covered 9 presidential campaign cycles in Iowa. At SIU, he teaches a course in public affairs reporting for the Jern School. Several years ago, the veteran political reporter Jack Germond wrote that Mr. Yepsen is one of the premier political writers in the country. He recently announced that he'll be retiring from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute in Carbondale, effective at the end of this month. But he's not going away. Stella, relax. We have all these SIU alums. Stella Black, one of our great members, her former professor, John Jackson's up here, David. David, you know, all that talent and energy he has, he'd like to write a few books. Okay. At the very end of the table, our second presenter, John Jackson, who's the visiting professor at the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute. He's had a 5-decade career as teacher, researcher, administrator, former chancellor, but he's really a political scientist by training. And he's done a lot of work with international students and professionals who come to the U.S. as part of a study institute for student leaders on American government and politics, sponsored by the United States Office of Academic Exchange Affairs, U.S. Department of State. I've been fortunate that John and his colleagues, the late Barbara Brown and John Foster, have asked me several times to meet with these students from Vietnam, Korea, Cambodia, Bosnia, Serbia, etc., and introduce them to the city of Chicago. So we take them to all the great spots. And it's my pleasure to have John with us today. John edits the Simon Review series and assists in the production of the Simon Institute's polls, very important this year. And he's the author of 2 recent books, The Essential Paul Simon, published by SIU Press, and The American Political Party System, Continuity and Change Over 10 Presidential Elections, that was published by the Brookings Institute in the fall of 1914. Now, directly to my left is Becky Carroll. Becky is president and CEO of C Strategies, LLC. She's considered one of Chicago's top public affairs strategists. She's a 2-decade vet. You're really that mature, huh? 2-decade vet of high-profile political and public policy campaigns. She served as a top advisor to many public sector executives in Chicago City Hall and the Illinois Office of the Governor. She's held top positions on local, state, and national political campaigns, including National Director of Women for Obama in 2008, and most recently as chairman and CEO of Chicago Forward, a super PAC that raised over $5 million to support the re-election of Mayor Rahm Emanuel, as well as pragmatic aldermen. I expect someone to ask that question. What constitutes a pragmatic alderman? There may very well be, Joe. She's the founder and president of C Strategies, LLC, and will be one of our discussants. By the way, she's a 3rd-generation Chicagoan. And in her bio, it says she's a devout Chicagoan. So I first thought this meant she was extremely religious. I don't know about religion.
About Chicago.
But she's so proud and devout about Chicago. That's great. Thank you. And our final panelist, Pat Brady, who's spoken to our city club many times. Pat is a government affairs consultant to Next Generation Public Affairs. He's been a fixture on local and national TV as a surrogate for numerous political candidates and as an advocate for the Republican Party. Several years ago, under Pat's chairmanship, The Illinois Republican Party had their best year in decades in both fundraising and electoral success. And Pat's very involved in hoping that trend continues here in 2016. Member of the Republican National Committee, he played a key role in the election of two Republican National Committee chairmen, served on the Finance Budget Committee, chaired the Ethics Committee. So we have a very distinguished panel, and I'd like to invite Dave Yepsen, to come up and kick us off. David, if you would.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting us to be here. I particularly want to thank the University of Illinois system for buying lunch for a bunch of Salukis here today. That's really kind of you guys to do that. I want to recognize a couple people. Southern Illinois University System President Randy Dunn is in the back of the room, as is the SIU Carbondale Chancellor Brad Caldwell. I want to introduce the bosses. I want to make sure I introduce note my two colleagues who are here. Delio Calzolari, who's our associate director, and he does our development work, so you may be hearing from him, and Shiloh Dietz, who's our researcher. So thank you. There, I appreciate that. I'm gonna throw a lot of numbers at you today, and we've got them up here. All this stuff can be found on simonpoll.org. We post all our stuff there. So if you want to get into the weeds, we have our cross tabs and all there, and you can take a look at that. It's a lot of data, and we're going to hit just some of the high points here today, and so we have a lot of time for our discussion. And you're right, we do have a lot of paper in front of us, and it reminded me of that old saying, and lawyers know it, that you can always tell who's got the most trouble in a courtroom by who's got the most paper in front of them. Let's get started. We'll talk about the horse race for president first. These are likely voters. We have a plus or minus of 3.1% on these numbers, 850 some sample size. Clearly, Hillary Clinton holds a very comfortable lead there. Donald Trump way behind, and there are still a few voters who are not sure. The one thing that jumped out at me was the independent candidates, the Libertarian and the Green, really aren't much of a factor here in this race. Next screen. Presidential race, there's no surprise to Illinois political observers about how this breaks down. Chicago suburbs, downstate. I was a bit surprised that Donald Trump wasn't doing better downstate. You all know that a Republican in this state has really got to blow the doors off downstate to have any chance of a statewide race, and he looks pretty weak to me in the suburbs and downstate. Next. Enthusiasm for the race? Wow, that's a pretty, nobody's very excited about that. And you ought to see the numbers with the, among millennial voters. It's really in the tank. I mean, the Bernie people, younger under 35 voters are not very excited about this race. Next slide. Senate race. Tammy Duckworth, Congresswoman Duckworth, Senator Kirk. Here again, few don't knows. This is where I wondered the split there. Makes me wonder if we didn't wind up capturing a bit of a Democratic skew in this. We went into the field the day after the presidential debate. We had the debate on Monday night. We were in the field on Tuesday, came out of the field on Sunday. If you'll recall, she had a pretty good time in that debate. She had a pretty good week after that. Donald Trump had a terrible week. So I'm sitting here thinking that's a pretty good big margin for a Democrat and a pretty weak showing for a Republican. I wonder if we didn't capture a little bit of a Democratic bubble there. We'll see. The important thing is to remember, and I try to say this whenever I talk about polling, it's not a prediction, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a picture of public opinion and point of time. This campaign's got a month to go, two debates, hurricane tearing up a couple battleground states, a real tragedy. I mean, there are lots of things that can interfere with the outcome of an election. We still haven't heard. I dread what terrorists may do. All those things can have an impact of our election. So please remember, we're taking a picture here, not trying to project the outcome of a race. Next screen. That's, again, by area. I don't think there are many surprises there. Why don't you go to the next screen? The controller race. Political scientists like to look at things like obscure races like the comptroller race to get an idea of the partisan flavor of the electorate. Most people don't probably know who these people are. They tend to vote their party on a lot of these questions. So I think here you can see that there's a Democratic skew in the Illinois electorate in a presidential election year. Not a big surprise. Next screen. Here's the one that this is where you get to see the governor and Speaker Madigan in a race for most unpopular politician. You'll see that Speaker Madigan is winning at 63% disapproving and the governor at 55%. John Cullerton, nobody knows him well enough to have much of an opinion, which may be a good deal for him or not. I don't know. Let's go to the next one. Here's the governor's job approval rating. You can see he started out about a third and a third and a third. Approved, disapproved, don't know. And over time, he's grown out of that 55% figure. So the trend line, not too good for the governor. But it's important to remember when we look at job approval ratings, candidates don't run against their job approval rating. They run against an opponent. They have a flesh and blood foe. And that's what really counts as that test. But these are unprecedented hard times in Illinois. It's no surprise to me anyway that that the governor has, and all leaders really, have a lot of people unhappy with them. The next slide. Okay, John, you're up now.
I'm going to do briefly constitutional amendments and might have been constitutional amendments and one other major issue that fits there. Starting with the constitutional amendment that is on the ballot, and I'm going to read from the Secretary of State summarizing it. That blue thing that you get that's mailed out by Jesse White's office says, the approval of this amendment will ensure that transportation funds are used only for transportation purposes. Boy, that's about as big as you ever get on one of these kinds of things. I don't know what Senator Dillard's position on this is, but if he's for it, I think he is. He ought to be pretty happy with that. 13% oppose. Gas tax lockbox by area next. I think not surprisingly, downstate 87% approve, a landslide there. The next highest approval is 78%. The lowest, and I'm putting in quotes, is Chicago, but 73% approval in Chicago. I'm going to go out on a limb here, even though David said we don't predict. I think it's probably going to pass. Let's look at redistricting, which might have been if things had worked out, and they didn't, but redistricting's been around a while and certainly is of great interest. 72% approve of having an independent commission do this, only 18% oppose. We've been doing this a while, and we have some historic data, which we do have available. It was at 53 when it was first tested. It is now at 72. Perhaps the impact of the independent maps effort has gained some traction there, because that's almost 20% change in a relatively short period of time. Won't be in that question that you have to answer when you go vote, but it's certainly not an issue going away. And then term limits has come storming into the conversation. I don't know about your television in northern Illinois, but in southern Illinois, we get enormous political ads all on term limits, part of the turnaround agenda for the governor, of course, and our television commercials are just ubiquitous with term limits. They're even on St. Louis and Cape Girardeau, Missouri television, which tells you how widespread the campaign is. Anyway, it's wildly popular, 81% with only 17% oppose. And now one more slide. Yeah, you've got that one. It's been at 80% and then dropped down just a little bit and then back at 80%. So it's one of those things you can't go wrong betting on term limits. It is a controversial claims are, I think, probably overrun the realities. You can make your own conclusions. There are 15 states that have term limits. Look them up and decide whether or not you think they're the best-run states in the country. But nevertheless, term limits is very much with us and is going to be with us. And I think what you're seeing is two things. One is almost all of these things have become proxy battles between the Secretary of or the Speaker of the House and the governor for this race and for 2018, because I think we're building here the agenda for what we'll be talking about, seeing television about, and fighting over in 2018. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our discussants.
If you don't want to, I will. I mean, I've never been shy about speaking.
Yes, I usually am, but maybe I'll just say off the top of my head, I mean, I'm not surprised about Donald Trump. He keeps giving gifts to Hillary Clinton almost every other week. After you don't do so well in debate and you get up at 3 in the morning to tweet misogynistic tweets, you're going to have a really bad week. So I hope he keeps on giving those gifts, because he's not only helping Hillary, he's helping other Dems on the ticket as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and I've said this publicly, I say on the radio every Thursday, we have a complete idiot at the top of the ticket. That's the way it is.
We agree.
And that's how I feel about it. Now, that being said, which won't get an applause line, if they did a survey question on is this state messed up right now, you'd probably get 99% of the people responding that it is. And the battle now, or the proxy battle that's going on, in the backdrop of a year where Republicans should get beat everywhere because we have Trump at the top of the ticket, the real battle here is Speaker Madigan. And you have a 65% disapproval rate. I've seen it as high as 80%. And in a state where we should be getting killed because Republicans throughout the state, and these particularly in the state House, are able to tie him to the candidates, we're going to have a lot of success, I think. But more importantly, these reform questions that you see, the people of this state want change, and they want something different. I remember working with Senator Dillard 6 years ago trying to explain what redistricting is, which people don't quite grasp. But right now, if you walked around the room and asked, everybody knows what redistricting reform is. Give credit to the people that have been advocating for it. But this state, the electorate, badly wants reform. And so this proxy battle we're seeing, I think, in this election, I think Republicans are going to pick up some seats, because Governor Rauner, whether you believe me or agree with me on this or not, is not wearing the jacket for what's going on in the state right now. If you see other polls and if you're out in the field in these campaigns, Mike Madigan's wearing the jacket for all this right now, and people really do want something different. They want the state to be run well. They don't want these battles and no budget over straight raw politics, not what's good for the state. Now, Governor Rauner's got some bad disapproval numbers there, too. He's at 55% disapproval, but that doesn't surprise me at all, given that he's running and doing exactly what he said he was going to do. When you talk about term limits or redistricting or any of these union reforms he talked about, it's not like he didn't run on that. In fact, I sat in rooms with people where he would say, you know, I might want to tone that down a bit, but he's running and doing exactly what he said he was going to do. So as bad a year as it's at the top of the ticket with the Donald, I could sit here for 15 minutes and trash, and I'd be glad to do it. Republicans are still in a lot better shape than I think that some of these numbers here might indicate.
Well, I would just add to that unfortunately for Republicans, they have Donald Trump at the ticket, and he's not going to help anyone on the down ballot. And when you have others who are running like Suzanne Mendoza, and anyone who knows Susanna knows she's the Energizer Bunny, between her and Hillary Clinton and Tammy Duckworth, I think they're going to bring everyone along. And I don't think people vote for, they vote for people. They don't vote for whatever kind of constitutional amendments might be on the ballot. So I think in that perspective, and you see the trends here, I think the Democrats are going to end up doing pretty well on Election Day.
Well, the thing is, too, but I think, and I'm not criticizing the polling. I mean, as a Saluki myself, and I certainly respect all the work they've done here, but the Democrats are relying on an Obama-like turnout, which they're not going to get. Hillary Clinton does not excite the Democrats like Barack Obama did. And believe me, in 2012, in 2010, when Senator Dillard lost by 167 votes and probably would have been our next governor, we would have had a good map. We picked up five of our four targeted races, and Mark Kirk won. In 2012, when Barack Obama was at the top of the ticket, we lost everything but one. Even Rodney Davis, one of our best congressmen downstate, almost lost that race because the difference in the turnout was Barack Obama. I watched the numbers come in from 10 o'clock in the morning. Oh, this is going to be a disaster for us, and it was. The point is Hillary Clinton does not excite millennials. I don't think she excites the minority community nearly as much as Barack Obama did. So these individual candidates, I agree, people tend to vote for individuals. The drag upward at the top of the ticket is not there.
How worried are you about the point Becky makes about the Trump being so unpopular with a lot of Republicans that a lot of Republicans are just going to stay home, and that could sink your chances down ballot?
I mean, it's not great news, but Illinois is traditionally a ticket-splitting state. I mean, I remember doing the McCain campaign. There were as many McCain signs in the 19th Ward as there were out where I live in the western suburbs. So Illinoisans, I think, are very astute. They do a lot of ticket splitting, but it's not great news to have him there. But even some smart Democrats will tell you, downstate, Donald Trump, even though it's not great in this poll, Donald Trump is popular down there, and there are a lot of Democrats who are irritated, reform-minded Democrats, particularly, and you can divide the state by highways, who might come out and vote Republican because they're going to vote along with Trump.
Well, I think I'd have to disagree there. I mean, when you have an open presidential campaign like we did in 2000 when I was on the Gore campaign here in Illinois, if Gore and Bush were neck and neck in downstate, I mean, you would have knocked me off my chair. And the fact that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are neck and neck downstate, I think it says that the Republicans have a real problem with their nominee, which we can all admit. But he's not going to help bring anyone along here on the Republican ticket in Illinois.
Yeah, well, we can agree to disagree. I've seen some polls that indicate that he actually does drag some Democrats over the Republican side. But again, I could be completely wrong. I've actually been wrong before, believe it or not.
No, and I specified that the caveat that that's a real Democratic flavor to this to these numbers, and I wondered about that Southern Illinois. He is going to do better than
you're about D plus 20 on this, which is that's an optimal almost Obama turnout. I think you guys probably agree. So you might get that, you might not get that, but that, and you guys are the pollsters. But just knowing who's actually going to show up, I think there might be in this election because I've got a theory in the suburbs anyway that there's this she'll kill me if I vote for Trump element out there. So every guy will not admit he's actually going to vote for Trump. Or write a check or show up to a Trump event, but he actually might vote for him, but he's not going to tell his wife. you know. But when you do these pollings, you do it by propensity, and the fours or whatever, the ones that don't get picked up, might be there. Now, I've seen it on the other side, too, where the only one that was really attracting new voters was Bernie Sanders. But
I just wanted to add, keep your eye on how these polls perform against online polls. We've seen some, it's anecdotal, but the world is moving toward online polling. We had 1,000 sample size. We said we want 60% cell phones because that's what it is in Illinois. We got that. So we feel good about that. But it's not cool to be for Donald Trump. And so do respondents say they don't know or lie about when they tell a human being who they're for president? This is akin to what we call the Bradley effect, 1982, Los Angeles mayor's race. Tom Bradley, an African-American, is running for governor. I'm sorry, the governor's race. Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley is running for governor. He's an African-American, and the poll said he was going to win. Wake up the day after the election, Republicans won. What happened here to these polls? Well, people lie about things like race. It's not cool, or if it is cool, then you can get a skew there. So, and you see in some of these online polls, Trump actually does better than some of these phone-based and landline polls. So, as students of this game, keep an eye on election night. We may see that Trump does better than what some of these kind of numbers would suggest, simply because people are doing what Pat just said. They're not telling anybody, but they're going to go out and they're going to stick it to them and vote for Donald Trump.
I'm pretty clear I'm not voting for Donald Trump for the
okay.
record.
Okay, you can take that to the bank.
Thank you.
John, do you have a comment on what's been said with your colleagues here?
Just a minor point, and I think it relates to one thing Pat said. We actually have done the crosstabs. We haven't had a chance to really analyze these data very carefully, but there are currently more Republicans crossing over to vote for Clinton than there are Democrats crossing over to vote for Trump. Not a big bunch of difference, but a difference and a fairly sizable.
Are those suburban?
No, it's statewide.
Statewide?
Yeah.
See, that's why, in addition to Trump not really helping out the Republicans, I'm not willing to see that Rahner's going to help either. I mean, if you look at the trend in his numbers, he has spent the last month or the last year decimating social service agencies. I don't think there's probably anyone in this room who probably doesn't know someone who's been impacted by that. And I think if you look at those numbers, you see that's going to have an impact on races as well. I'd like to see how many Republicans are going to have Rahner and Trump on their pass cards and on their mail. I'm
we don't
guessing.
We don't do pass cards. We're not that sophisticated.
Both David and several other people mentioned the fact that millennials don't seem to be motivated. We're here about a month away from the election. What could be done to motivate those voters, if anything?
It's her party. What's that?
Right. Well, I think young people, I mean, they might still be undecided and uninspired to some extent, but we all know when folks get closer to Election Day and they see what's at stake, I'm going to have faith in the millennials that they're going to come out to vote because they're not going to want to inherit a Trump legacy, and they're not going to want to inherit a legacy here in Illinois of Republicans having even more control in the state house. We've already seen what's happened. In southern Illinois, I remember reading a story about how the only domestic violence shelter for maybe 50 miles was shutting down because they weren't getting paid by the state. I just think it's unacceptable, and I'm tired, frankly, of the Republicans holding people's lives hostage to help advance their own political agenda. And that's what Leslie Munger has done. That's what Bruce Rahner has done. And just like Pat said earlier, you know, voters are astute, and they're going to remember that. They know people have been impacted. They're reading the papers. They see the back and forth. And I want to have faith in people that they're going to send a message that they're not going to tolerate it.
You know, it's scary, though, too, along the lines of the millennials. I saw an article yesterday about some professors that teach in political science departments where the youngsters are now questioning democracy, whether it works, given the tone of this campaign. And to me, that's a pretty scary – this campaign has been a disaster all the way around, I think, in my opinion. And to have a 19-year kids – I have kids that age that think that democracy is not the greatest form of government, to me is very scary.
As the father of a millennial, I can tell you we won't know until about 5 minutes before before they vote. If they vote, will she vote? What are you doing? That's the way they operate.
Aren't you going to have them bring you one of those receipts that says, I have voted, before you let them sleep in the house at night?
Okay, let's open this up to questions from the floor.
We had one on the back.
Way in the back.
She's been waving.
Ah, Amanda, here we have a question here. And others, don't hold back. Remember, this is the City Club. Everything's fair and square, sandbagging and everything else.
While she's collecting those questions, I just want to add, we have polled on the impact of budget cuts. We've still got more releases to come out of here. We're looking at what's the impact of the budget, has it affected you, how. We're looking at some environmental questions. We're looking at how Illinoisans view the labor movement and organized labor. So we've got a package of data here that we've got to get through, Pat, but we do get at some of those questions.
Okay, let me look at a couple of these questions here. Alexandra Eidenberg, where are you, Alexandra? Towards the rear. Do you see our state changing term limits? We continue to re-elect Speaker Madigan,
even though the masses say they do not like him. Now what? How can the people of Illinois create change? Who wants
to start?
Well,
I think the short short answer is no. I don't think we're going to adopt term limits. I mean, whatever frustrations are going to have to be channeled otherwise, I don't think it's going to happen.
If you have redistricting reform, you don't need term limits because there's a natural turnover in districts. If you have a nonpartisan commission drawing districts, it's true where I come from, it's starting to happen in California, Arizona, Florida, other states.
You guys do by computer, don't you?
Yeah, it's just a computer printout. And now you can do it in seconds. But there's just a natural turnover in districts every 10 years. About a third of the membership will change. So to me, I agree with Dr. Jackson. There's no correlation that we found. And Chris Mooney at IGPA is the expert on term limits around the country. There's no correlation between, you know, a good unemployment rate, budget growth, health care. You pick any metric you want. There's no indication that term limits have helped. In fact, California went back and reworked its term limits law to make it a little more reasonable. So I don't think, Alexander, I don't think we're going to get to term limits. I think there'll be a pretty good campaign if we ever do. The secret is a redistricting reform. And there's still plenty of time for the supporters of that to put another petition drive together and try again for because we're not going to, in the 2018 election, because we're not going to reapportion until after the next census.
And I'm certainly not in the majority, apparently, because I still believe term limits are called elections, and I like to leave that into the hands of voters. And Michael Madigan, yeah. And Michael Madigan is still here because whatever he is doing on behalf of his residents, you know, they keep electing him, and that's democracy, and that's why we need folks like you, Alexandra, and who is the president of Mom and Baby and does amazing work in Illinois. That's why we need people to speak up and be active and engaged, so you ensure that your issues are heard regardless of who's in leadership.
Well, here, let me take a different view on that. We won't get redistricting reform or term limits because the speaker opposes them. We're not going to get a legislative fix. And I think a lot of the cynicism we see in this state, which we witnessed with the ruling from the Supreme Court on redistricting reform, where the author of the opinion got $2.5 million and was saved his seat by the supporters of the speaker and the Democrats, whether that's proper or not, it leaves an impression in people's mouths or brains that the system is rigged. Any of these reforms that 85-80% of the voters want, we can't get because one or two people in Springfield oppose them. Whether you agree or disagree with term limits, it's not a fair system right now. And if we don't get redistricting reform, we're going to have the same lopsided distribution in Springfield. So these, I think, reforms, if we want to save the state, are essential for the long term, even with their warts that David has pointed out, are essential for the long-term health of this state.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask another question. This is from Zach Kautsky. Zach, where are you at? Oh, right up there. Who do you think is underperforming the most among their party, Mark Kirk or Tammy Duckworth? Who would like to address that question first?
What does underperforming in the campaign?
I guess so. Do you mean underperforming in the campaign?
Yeah, I mean, excuse me. So, based, you know, party loyalists, Kirk has obviously had issues within his party, as being seen as too moderate. Duckworth had some issues in the primary and since then, motivating specifically up in the Chicagoland area. So, we're going to perform the most baseline party loyalty and support.
Okay, so we'll give this one to Becky and to Pat.
I mean, I'll just say that I have to admit, it's not the one race I've been paying the most attention to, but as a lifelong Illinoisan, and I've been very active in politics my whole life, obviously, you know, Mark Kirk, out of all the Republicans in Washington, may not be the worst Republican, but I don't think he's very engaged. I think Tammy is tapping into that. I think Tammy could be doing a lot more to engage Chicago, but she's got one of the most compelling stories of anyone to run for office, and I always believe at the end of the day, again, voters are voting for people, and her story and her experience I think far surpasses her opponent, and obviously my hope is she's going to win in November.
Thanks, Becky.
I think I'm underperforming right now. You could probably see, Mark Senator Kirk probably is underperforming because he's the incumbent, and he's really given nobody a good reason not to vote for him. He's been a real middle-of-the-road guy, gets along with everybody, made some great picks for the U.S. Attorney's Office, and has done a lot of good things. So you could maybe say that. I'm not saying that I'm saying that, but the thing is with Mark. No, wait, let me finish. I'm going to be careful. Let me finish. I want to say this with Mark because I'm saying ironically, I've been helping Mark for 15, 14 years, and every campaign, Mark Kirk's going to lose. Mark Kirk's going to lose. Mark Kirk's going to lose. I remember sitting on a phone call with a bunch of donors 3 days before the SEALs race, whatever, 8 years ago. Oh, he's going to lose by 8 points. No, he's going to lose by 9. He won by 10. So anybody that underestimates Mark Kirk as a candidate, they always, always say he's going to lose. And you know what? He always, always wins. So let's wait and see what happens in this race.
Okay. Well,
my answer to that is Senator Kirk is underperforming. I mean, for one thing, he's underperforming with the Republican Senatorial Committee, which doesn't seem to want to help him. I also, unfortunately, his health situation has really slowed his ability to wage the kind of campaign that I saw him wage in 2010. And it's a presidential year. He won in an off year that was good for Republicans. It's a presidential year. He's got that to fight. But tragically, his health has just slowed him down.
Okay, Kevin Malloy. Where are you, Kevin? Over here. Is the Fair Maps effort really just throwing in the towel that they can't win under the current system? I don't recall Republicans and business leaders pushing this when Edgar and Pate Phillip drew the 1990 map. Man, those little history.
No, both sides have been rigging it since the beginning of time. It's not just a Democrat thing. Republicans were pretty good at it, too. Just not as good as the Democrats. And I remember election night 2010, Senator Dillard, we lived this when Bill Brady lost. Like, we're going to get hammered on this. They're going to draw a map, and they drew a brutal map. But the remap effort was totally nonpartisan. And there's a real, I think, desire for redistricting reform.
Just a postscript on that. If it's consolation to Illinois Republicans have vastly outstripped Democrats nationwide in terms of the control of governorship and legislative bodies, which let them do the same thing to way more states throughout the U.S., which changed the whole dynamic of the House particularly. So while in Illinois it's certainly one way, it's much, much more important at the national
level. It's only good if we do it, right?
Oh, okay.
thank you for that addendum, John. Boy, now I know how Lester Holt felt.
This is from Brian Klaus, I think. He's with the John Marshall Law School. Where are you, Brian? Right over here. Okay. It's directed to you, David. What is the most striking difference you see between Chicagoland and deep southern Illinois in the poll results?
The most striking, I suppose it'd be the Trump differential. But that's expected. I mean, it was not. I didn't look at these and go, wow. I did think about maybe Democrats overperforming, Republicans underperforming.
Okay, thank you. Judith Thorman, where are you, Judith? She stepped out. She goes to the back of the list. John Mick, where are you, John? Excellent, over there on the left. If the, in quotes, campaign is so bad, what does that say for the, boy, this is a city club, Vox Populi across the United States who voted for Trump and Clinton? Who wants to deal with that?
I went to Southern. I don't even know what that means.
You can tell he took Latin.
I have a theory about that. I just made a note about this. This election, we're going to elect the most unpopular president we've ever elected, highest unfavorables. They hate the choices that they've been presented. In both parties, you have large groups of people who are not happy with their choices. And, what is going to happen after this election, we're going to have a president. And both parties are going to wake up, and it's sort of like Alec Guinness in the movie Bridge Over the River Kwai. You know, what have I done? Because they're going to say our process didn't work. The nominating process has not worked for either party this cycle. And so both parties are going to go through a real introspective period about how we run our nominating process, our caucuses, our primaries, our delegate selection, superdelegates. We're going to have that in both. There's going to be that discussion. But the second discussion that all of us as Americans have to have sort of goes to what you're saying. There is a lot of disaffection in this country. There are a lot of alienated people, young people. And we as Americans have got to say, what do we do to change that? I'm an old reporter. I just ask the questions, but I think we got to start coming up with some answers. That's my take.
Okay, good. I have a couple more questions here. This is from Bennett Lasco. Bennett, where are you? Right there, straight back. How do the panelists expect the changes in voter alignments in this presidential election cycle? He's looking to the future to impact the next national and presidential election cycles.
Well,
John, this is right up your alley.
Well, I think all of the wailing and moaning about the future of the Republican Party is just misplaced. The Republicans will be fine. They'll have some soul searching like they did in the postmortems after 2012, but the Republicans will control the House, likely control the Senate. I'm not sure about that. And they control something like 30 of the states. So I'm really not worried about the Republican Party. On the other hand, you might give a pause for the Democrats if Clinton wins, because they're going to get waxed in 2018, because that's the way it works. And she'll be somebody that they'll love running against. People who hated the Clintons in the 90s still hate the Clintons. People who hated Obama still hate Hillary Clinton. And she's just going to be clobbered, because she'll be on the ballot in 2018. So I do worry about the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I mean, we picked up 900 some legislative seats. Right. We have 30 governorships, largest majority in the House since the 1920s. We might very likely keep the Senate. And in 18, we're definitely going to get the Senate as a Republican. We just haven't been able to mount a presidential campaign in a long time that's been effective.
Becky or David, do you have any comment on this question?
Just that obviously the Democrats have a lot of work to do with millennial voters. If we're still trying to convince them that Hillary Clinton is the best choice, then we're not just having a problem this cycle, but we will in 2018. So I'd like to think that the Democratic Party and the Clinton, she's, you know, my opinion, the most qualified person to ever run for office, most incredibly politically astute. She's going to do something to try to figure that out.
Now, you keep talking, the panel's mentioned millennium voters in this several times. What about mature individuals like Ed Mazur here, you know, a white male who's over 55? Do we count at all?
Of course, because you vote.
I know white Irish males don't count anymore.
Okay, thank we have Anonymous, a chicken. Anonymous, he just put his name on here, and he's a member of the City Club. We're going to check this one out. What is your take as to how Trump has maintained the approval, rating, and support that he has given various statements that would seemingly eliminate virtually any other candidate?
That's a good question. I can only speak from experience of people who believe it or not, I know some folks who are voting for Trump. I think there is a group of people out there who feel that, you know, they haven't done anything, but, you know, they're struggling. They've had nothing handed to them, in their opinion. They feel like they read the paper, read the news. They're constantly being blamed for the ills of this country. And somehow he's been able to tap into those emotions that this group that feel that they are left behind feel. And I think Bernie did that for young people as well, because they didn't feel the other candidates were speaking to them. But it's not going to be enough to get Trump over the hump in November.
I want to just add that all the negative things we're saying about our system, young people, and so forth, they hold across the industrial world. And if you look at the European nations, They've got all these problems particularly with their young people, and then some, and their economies are not doing nearly as well as ours. So this is a malady that does affect popular democracy in the Western world.
There's been some scary votes in the last 6 months.
Yeah, look at what just happened to the British, for example.
Austria.
The Germans or the Austrians or the French, they have way more problems in a real sense than we do.
But their reaction to it's been more Trump-like than statesman-like. It's more going to the extreme, right?
Yeah, they have the Le Pens and the sort of radical right movement that is much stronger there than here.
Okay, and I have a David, did you want to comment?
No, that's fine.
Becky? Fine. Judith, did you return? I will ask it anyhow. It's the last question. What impact will advertising have at this point in the campaign? Hillary's ads, for example, haven't moved the needle so far. Any comment?
We don't get dumped with them here like everybody else does, but if you look at her numbers in the last week, she's leading in all the battleground states right now, Florida, Ohio. She had a great I didn't think it was a spectacular debate performance, but he was so bad. She's on a roll right now, so I don't know if you can attribute that to advertising or just Trump basically exploding in the last. Some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth, particularly after the debate, I just don't know what. I can't believe he's actually listening to advisors, but whatever she's doing seems to be working. Right now, she's got a fairly comfortable state-by-state lead. I'm not saying it's going to hold, but whatever she's doing all right now.
Pat, what do you think we can expect from Mr. Trump in the next debate, or will he be on some sort of tranquilizer?
Well, everything I've read, I actually talked to some of this morning in the Know in Washington, that he's going to do one prep session, and he's going to go on and do a town hall. And town halls, in my opinion, are the most difficult to do because they can pick up on nuances, or, you know, if you look at your watch like George Bush did or walk around like McCain did, and that's a Saturday Night Live skit. So if he's not going to prepare, and from what I understand, Secretary Clinton spent the last 4 days off the trail preparing. And I think Trump's high watermark, and I was wrong once before, but I think his high watermark is going to be 30 minutes before they walked into the debate last week. Because he was terrible in that debate in the last hour.
And I'm curious for the pollsters in that, David and John, did the health issue come up at all when you reached out to these likely voters?
We didn't ask anything specific about that.
Okay. Amanda, I think now we're ready for our drawing.
While you're doing that, can I just add one thought about the advertising? Two thoughts. Well, first of all, I want to recognize my colleague, Dr. Linda Baker. I forgot earlier, and I apologize.
Linda, where are you? There you are.
I'm sorry. I got to work with these people. Advertising. It may not. We're awash in so much of it that none of it may be having an impact. And all this Citizens United money that was freed up has resulted in a lot of television. There are a lot of political consultants who make a lot of money buying and making television advertising. And so that tends to be the cure for every ill in a campaign. We are washing that stuff in Southern Illinois. I think there's a law of diminishing returns on some of this advertising. And as a result, in all these battleground states where these voters are just hammered with this stuff, it doesn't seem to be moving numbers. And I think there is a question, and Molly Ball has a very good piece on this in recent Atlantic Magazine, about whether all this TV does any good, and sorry, but what value political consultants are to a campaign.
Hey, if a lot of our people here, that's how they afford to come to our luncheons.
Yeah, that really hurt.
If the only tool you got is a hammer, every problem becomes a nail. And if the only thing you do is make TV commercials, that's all you know how to respond.
All right, cut the mic off.
And my point is some of these dollars are going to go into things that these people do. And use of big data mining, finding voters who haven't participated. That's how Hillary Clinton won, particularly in 2012 in Ohio. So that's to kind of watch that as the next place politics moves, because I just think there's so much TV advertising. People are more sophisticated. It's just not having the same effect it used to have.
Thank you very much for coming. We look forward to seeing you at a future meeting.